Hello and welcome to Profiles in Risk. This is your host, Tony Canyas. And today we are recording episode 220, something like that. It really is quite impressive. Lamparelli did most of the heavy lifting. I've done maybe the last 80 episodes or so. And today I have with me two of my favorite people in the industry. My go-to agency side consultant and expert, Kelly Donahue Piro, right? Did I pronounce that correctly?
You can really call me anything, but it's Piro.
Piro. I mean, I'll have to practice that. Kelly Donahue Piro, who runs not one, but two companies that are dedicated to help agents. And we'll let you talk a little bit about those. And then I also have one of my very good friends, who I like to call the agency side dark wizard of the CPCU Society, Matthew Strzok. So thank you both for joining me today.
I'm actually just a hobo that writes insurance. That's the way I do it.
The reason that I called on both Matthew and Kelly for this episode, it's rare that I have more than one person at a time, but today we're talking about a super important topic that I am way out of my depth in, right? I have a lot of opinions, but like I always say, the disclaimer, I've never worked in an agency before. So today we're talking about how to recruit, train, retain, how to grow homegrown producers or agents. And this is huge because in my day job with Jacobson, the number one call we get that we don't have a solution for, we can help with insurance staffing, permanent or temporary, from the boardroom to the back room in life, PNC, health, agency, or broker inside, except producers, right? And we don't even have somewhere to send you to. And I get a ton of questions on Chat with Tony about from agents about the same topic. So I have no idea what to say. So I'll give you each a couple minutes to introduce yourselves and what's your game within the agency space.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Well, I'm Kelly Donahue Piro from teeny tiny Rhode Island. We just got about 9 inches of snow outside, so it's a winter wonderland. We're having a white Christmas. Not so bad with everything going on in the world. But what I think as far as the, hey, I want producers, I kind of always like to start with, well, why? You know, because I think some agencies think producers are like magical unicorns. They come in and it's perfect and new business is raining in. And I'm always like, well, are you prepared? You know, how is this all going to work? And sometimes I think agencies think it's like the easy pill. And I like to say, hey, we should plan for a producer at a preparation, not desperation. And, you know, the one thing I'm hoping we can talk about is today, I also think sometimes agencies are always searching for this unicorn producer, like this mythical creature that has all these connections and sells perfectly clean, beautiful, $500,000 accounts and does nothing wrong and isn't a diva and wants to like disrupt the whole business and hold the business owner hostage. And I say, those are unicorns. They're rare. They exist. But give me a B player that's a good team member that can follow a process all day long and we'll produce and you'll have a lot less drama in your life. So I think we can go all over the map on producers, but Matt, curious what you have to say and introduce yourself.
Yeah. So I'm Matthew Strzok. I'm happy to be, I think this is the second or third episode, maybe third episode I've had the pleasure of being involved in. So I love coming back and kind of touching home base almost. I run an agency. I started with a big broker, broke off a little over 3 years ago. And really the intent of running my agency, I wanted to run it like I thought it was going to need to look like in the next 10 or 20 years. Mm. So everything being decentralized, trying to utilize as much technology as possible, not necessarily kind of like chasing the next shiny thing, but really kind of utilizing the technology that was out really already out there that I think a lot of brokers still have yet to adopt. But in terms of like salespeople, I'm right on board with you, Kelly. Like my philosophy is I like to hire people that had a prior life. Okay. I just brought on a construction guy. He used to work construction. Like that's what I want. I want someone who speaks that language first, and then I'll teach them the insurance and the risk management. Right. But I think the question that you always have to ask yourself, if you're the sales manager or you're the agency owner, it's always like, what's the culture? Okay. If the culture is smile and dial, turn and burn, just factory, let's get as many opportunities in here. You don't need A players. You just need people that are going to sit there and follow the script and just do the same thing over and over and over again, which is not a bad thing. If that's your model, then that's your model, right? So that's going to change how you're looking and cultivating producers. If you're an agency that's built off of, like, you know, my agency, I want people to be more like risk management consultants than producers, right? I want to sell based off of a really long-term, like, deeply involved relationship with the prospects and the clients. So I'm looking for someone different. I'm also going to put more into on the front end, like cultivating them, you know. But yeah, no, you're right on board with me, Kelly. I mean, like, everyone has this mythical idea of like, well, you know, if I just hang out at Starbucks often enough, I'll find enough really good baristas that'll be able to like make $1 million books of business. And you're like, no, I mean, like, one of them might, but, you know, not all of them are, you know, they come from different walks of life. So not every single one of them is cut from the same cloth. But yeah, I mean, that's really it. I mean, I wish I had kind of like a cut and dry prognosis for it, but a lot kind of goes in that, you know, it depends column, if that makes sense.
So there's already a lot here that I would have never thought of. And by the way, I have to say this because otherwise I'll think about it the whole time. I didn't read the introduction I had written, but Kelly, I was going to mention that you, like myself, you are a fellow Delta loyalist.
Yes.
so we very much have that in common. I love it every time. Well, mostly last year, not so much this year, but every time you post a picture, and it's always a Delta plane. I haven't flown since March, and I miss it like I haven't seen my mom since January, and I haven't flown since March, and I think I miss Delta more than my mom, which is pretty bad.
Wow.
Delta's the best. You know, there is no other airline that compares to Delta.
So and I'm close to my mom. We chat all the time. We've been FaceTiming almost every day for several months. But anyway, I would have never thought that the prep before you hire that was really something, Kelly. When people ask me, I generally go, find somebody who's really good at selling, and then convince him that with an insurance, the renewals make it a beautiful over time business, right? And I do generally tell young producers when they're the ones calling, I do tell them, and I can't remember who I stole this from, but basically, you're not, I mean, you're an insurance professional, but I don't need you to be super active within insurance. I need you to be super active within whatever industry you're serving, right? If you want to do construction, go hang out with those guys, right? I can't remember where I stole that from, but that did sound like good advice, but I had no idea that number one, let's look in the mirror and figure out whether it is a producer that we need. So what does that looking in the mirror look like?
Well, I think it also looks like, are you, and Matt kind of alluded to this, but are you looking for an inbound producer that's going to take the leads coming in? And that's a different model. I love that model for agencies, to be honest with you, because as an owner, it gives you more control, right? Like, I'm feeding you, you're taking this opportunity. Through our marketing, they chose us. Now let's go do this. Are you looking for a hunter, someone that is going to go take down the dragons out there? And you know, there's some challenge with that with COVID. They are overcomable, but if you have a very traditional producer that's used to going out to networking events, well, you haven't flown since, you know, March. There's not that many networking events out there to go slay dragons right now, and you have to be different. And that means you got to go market yourself. So I think all roads kind of lead back to marketing to some degree. So if you're a new producer, what's the marketing looking like? And then is the agency ability to generate leads, or do you need someone that's going to go generate their own leads? And I own I own two businesses. I'm always thinking to myself, well, who has that relationship? If this is a marriage and it doesn't work out, well, where are we going with this? You know, you have this relationship. My business is now very vulnerable. How do we make both parties happy? So when you stay a long time, but also too, I have a little bit of skin in the game as far as, hey, these people are coming to us, not necessarily one person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the lifespan of a producer is also what's interesting too, right? So if you get the same producer day one, They're not the same producer that they are day 300, day, you know, 5,000. And to a certain extent, some producers evolve over time, right? So Kelly alluded to something really important is within you kind of like setting up organizationally, however your sales funnel or your sales process looks, you can have also multiple different types of producers, right? So you have the producer that goes in, out and hooks the fish, and then you have the producer that reels it in and cooks it, right? You, that's basically, you know, the opportunity creator and then the closer, right? Some people are just really good closers. You see that really often in say like, in say law firms. Mm-hmm. Law firms are big like that, right? The yeah. big partner is typically not the person doing the day-to-day work, and they're also not the one finding the opportunities of people's cases to go work on. He or she is the big gun that walks into the room at the end of the day and gets the contract finally signed, or you know the check for the, you know, the reserve account for the escrow account, right, for that client. So it's all a matter of what your structure looks like. And I don't think there's any one structure that's like more efficient. I think also the answer is when you're cultivating a producer, unless you have that kind of very factory oriented type of operation, you have to be extremely pliable in terms of how you bring that producer along, because every single producer is going to be a little bit different. Right. Some of them require, you know, they'll just sit there and watch a seasoned producer and kind of like through osmosis absorb it and they're good to go. Right. Other ones require, you know, sitting down and being given a checklist and they have to follow the checklist and things like that. So there's very much like personalities that have to be taken into account, if you would.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And then I think, you know, you can take that. You had alluded, hey, producer on day one is not the same as producer on day 300. And then you also have this challenge of the non-producing producer, mm-hmm. which is the sunsetting producer. They're sitting on this book of business. They make six figures. They pick up a file here and there. They lose a file, but they're really like, they're living the life. And there is no reason for this person to ever retire based on their commissions.
They're retired on the job.
Oh my gosh, I've seen 90 years old producers sitting there coming and reading the newspaper, telling the girls to get the endorsement, you know, and it's like, what are we doing? And I'm looking at like the commissions that their people are paying out, you know, these are older commission strategies, 50, 60%. And I'm like, you're paying 90-year-old 60% to sit on his book of business and like, and all of his expenses to go out to lunch with his buddies every day. Like, what are you doing?
Yep. So we actually have a little bit of a different model with that as far as that goes too. The one thing that we looked at in addition to kind of the culture and the technology setup was also just, you know, that, you know, the unicorn can be like an amazing producer. The unicorn is also the actual unicorn in agency world is organic growth. Okay. Mm-hmm. That is, if you find that is Mecca. Okay. The key is how do you get there, right? Because if you incentivize producers a lot on the front end, you can get that often, right? Where the producer has a couple million dollar book of business, mm-hmm. they're peeling off 20, 30, 40 points a year. And all they have to do is make sure to replace what they lose off the back end. You end up with no organic growth. And in fact, it's low profitability because you're probably paying them out more on the new than you are on the renewal. And so it's actually a bump for them in order to lose stuff off the back end and just replace it with, you know, comparable stuff. So, you know, it just creates churn. What we do is we build an incentive to actually have an equity stake in the book. Mm-hmm. And that also does another thing. We don't have to sign a non-compete, because that non-compete is basically the equity is the same thing that keeps them there as the non-compete. So right. you want
responsibility.
Yeah, you want to leave, that's fine. And maybe you'll get more of a front-end payout or something like that. But you're essentially burning the multiple on that equity that you could get paid out if the book gets sold, right? Now, ultimately, I don't ever want to be the seller. I want to be the acquirer. But that being said, you know, that 20% is really nice. And it's, you know, we don't do pensions all that often in this mm-hmm. industry anymore, right? Like, you know, your 401k is kind of like an aside, especially for most producers, you know, their book is the most lucrative asset that they have. But yeah, that's also something where, you know, say you do have that producer who's just like sitting there reading the paper every day, you could offer them a swap, like swap them on their compensation structure for an equity piece of the book. And I know that that's kind of like the third rail for some agencies. They just don't even want to talk about giving up any kind of ownership. But
that's very hard for me to understand. I always thought, maybe I'll be honest, I thought until this day, I always thought that basically the advantage of going to an independent agency was the ability to own at least part of my book. Otherwise, why not just open my own brokerage and join SIAA or whoever to get access to the right markets?
Salespeople are not good at operations. That's what I'm telling
you.
Well, there's a lot of things, right? So you get the service, you get the, you know, yes, you could join SIAA. You're in this crazy contract. You're fighting. You're doing all the accounting. You're doing all the service. You're doing all these things. And the owning your own book is, like, to Matt's point, is really controversial. And I think it depends on what is the expectation of this producer. So if I'm Kelly agency owner and I'm feeding this producer leads, you know, and they're just quoting them and closing them, it's hard to give equity into that, right?
Yes.
If they're going out and hustling and you find that one, they're a good culture fit, they're a good valuable member of the team, they're not the unicorn diva that's going to come in and, you know, scream at the staff all the time and be a little Tasmanian devil and, you know,
cost you as much in EPL suits as they bring in every year in their 100%. Book.
Yeah. Or they do sloppy business and they're not willing to document a management system or at least follow your processes and procedures.
Yep.
It's hard to give up equity in that. So when you find the right cultural fit, you find a true team member for the agency. And I think that there's this rub. I'm curious what you guys have to think, but there's sometimes this rub with the producer where, you know, agencies put the producer on a pedestal above other agency staff members. And I'm always just like, hey, that there, you all got to be one big team, because service people don't want to do what the producer does. Producer doesn't want to do what service people do. But let me tell you something, everybody's super valuable to the client. And so when agencies allow producers to break protocols, it's a really big situation. You know, it's basically spits in the face of the service team. Yep. And you don't want to be, you can call it a business partner. They might have equity in their book, but not equity in the full agency. But do you really want to have that kind of business tie to somebody like that?
Yep.
So I look at it like it's a gift for the right team member in the agency.
Yep.
Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I was just going to say, no, that's spot on. I'm sure you've heard the saying, you know, hire slow and fire fast, right?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it means. You know, you don't just give an equity stake in anyone. They have to be that cultural fit. They have to embody it. So there's almost like a tryout period. Like there has to be a tryout period in the beginning. You know, they're not just granted it right off. You know, even if they walk in with a book of business and from, you know, their prior beats, they have, you know, some business that they can already bring in day one, there still needs to be a tryout period, because, you know, Kelly's right. I mean, you're basically hitching your wagon to someone long-term now, right? And that can be disastrous. It also has huge upside, right? Like that producer now has incentive to continue to grow the book for the rest of their life, mm-hmm. or for as long as they're in the industry. But yeah, it can't be a scenario where it's like, you know, everyone gets it day one. There needs to be some kind of filter to make sure that you're not getting, you know, a really rough, bad camper that you're now hitched to for the rest of as long as they want to own onto that book.
So you guys have both talked about agencies where the marketing is so good, right? And Chris Paradiso, if he were here, would say, what's your marketing spend, right? You guys have talked about agencies where the marketing is so well tuned, the phone just rings, and yeah, the skill set of closing that phone that's ringing is very different from the hunter skill set. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, when I say producer, I'm thinking the hunter.
Sure.
The agencies that have, you know, the problem of the phone rings too much, in my experience, are rare. And those, by the way, if you're one of those, we can help you at Jacobson, right? Somebody that has the phone, right? We call that a cross-selling CSR. We can definitely help with that. But the reason we can help with that is because that's easier to find than the hunter.
Sure.
So I'm just curious. It's just a parenthesis. if you had to guess, what percentage of the agencies out there are one style versus the other, like the traditional hunter style versus the well-designed process where and well-designed marketing where what I need is just a good phone answer that can close?
I would say, I mean, a lot of the agencies we work with have a blend. They have some outbound producers, they have some inbound. I think it's impossible to not have some way to field the inbound stuff, because I don't want to pay a producer for someone that's calling in, you know, to get a home and auto policy that, you know, their neighbor referred them. Let's put that in the hands of somebody who can do it. I think that the agencies that do have outside producers, and I think it's something that, you know, we can play with on this podcast, though, is, you know, the frustration that I hear on the producers is, you know, they're not hitting sales goals, they're not doing this. Like, there's a lifestyle side of producing that has changed dramatically. The old school generation is like, you have to be out every night, you're going to come home at 9 o'clock at night, quote, on the weekends. And I know Tony's like,
I had no idea. Yeah.
Well, because that's kind of how they did it. You know, okay. It was that grind out. And today it's like, I want to be at my kid's soccer game. And, you know, I'm going to try to do things during these time frames. But the problem is both sides' expectations are so far off the reality, right? So it's unfair to say, miss all your kids' soccer games. And it's also unfair to say, hey, I'm committing to this agency goal and I'm not going to hustle to get there in some way, shape, or form, right? So when we're looking at those outside producers, I think that that's one of the biggest challenges I see with agencies is there's a lot of gray area expectations, and it kind of falls apart pretty quickly when a new person comes on board. And I don't know, Matt, if you've seen that.
Yeah, no, totally. The setup is also dependent upon the resources that you have to put into it, right? So, you know, Kelly said it before, if you're providing all this support and you just have one of those kind of like closer type producers where you're handing them opportunities, you're going to give them less of a sweetheart deal because they already have a sweetheart deal, right? Like they don't have to go out there and hunt and gather. The ones that are hunting and gathering, who also might be the closer as well, they're the ones that you really want to incentivize. I think the current environment is actually behooving a lot, and this was happening, you know, for a couple of years prior to this, but the current environment is making agencies think more along the line of being able to create opportunities for their producers. Whereas in the past, Kelly's right, it used to be, look, kid, it's your first day.
Here's a phone book.
Right? Here's a phone book. Dedicate, you know, 80 hours a week for the next 10 years, and then you're on easy street for the rest of your life, right? Like, if you can make that sacrifice, then, you know, you're going to have it well. And, I mean, the expectation's different, and just the business environment is different, right? Now, that being said, there are some producers out there, myself included, because I'm a glutton for punishment. You know, I'll put in the 80 hours, but I'm not knocking on doors or making phone calls 80 hours. I'm creating content. I'm trying to create marketing plans and stuff like that. You know, those producers, if you're not giving them an agency level support system, but they're doing that on their own, they might look like just the closer, but they're not. They're developing the actual leads and the opportunities. And so they need to be compensated and they need to be, you know, inspired as such. I think the other thing, the other misnomer that's out there in the marketplace right now, or I guess it's maybe just a constant within business is producers, it's almost always assumed that it's money that drives them. And it really isn't. Like for them, the money, it's almost like a professional sports athlete, right? The money is the confirmation. But really what they're after is they're after the acknowledgement of pretty much the amazing thing that they've done, right? Like, and that doesn't mean that they're any better than any other teammate, but what they have to do is so unique compared to, you know, what other, you know, kind of, you know, workers or people that are, you know, fulfilling a teammate role within the agency is doing. So they don't mean to be like exalted, but, you know, there's other ways too, where like, maybe it's not just a sales goal. Maybe it's some, you know, other level of notoriety to pass their way to kind of like inspire them, you know, and some of them are egomaniacs. I think nowadays you're also seeing an emergence of the introverted producer, Okay. Because a lot of people can be extroverted in this environment and maybe not necessarily extroverted in, you know, a cocktail party or a networking event or something like that. But yeah, I think that dedication, you know, where it's the producer who's like, you know, first of all, everyone's got to be upfront about it. Like, you got to have a clear conversation up front and just be like, look, if you're not going to be that 80-hour a week, like kind of workhorse kind of person, let's know that up front and let's work with that. And that also is going to change the expectation in terms of the performance goal. And it's going to change the expectation in terms of, you know, that compensation structure, kind of what that, you know, employment relationship looks like. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think millennials and Gen Z are very much interested in that. And you can speak to this, Tony, very much interested in that work-life balance, right? Which does not mean that they're bad sellers. It just means that they have competing priorities that maybe they're not willing to give up, like, you know, people in past generations have.
And even the Gen Xers are compared to the boomers, a work-life balance generation. And they're less willing on average to just work first, right? They're much more likely to make the soccer game than the boomers were. Yep. So you have to make those allowances when you're designing it. So if step one or step zero before hiring a producer, a successful producer, is understanding ourselves, understanding our agents, understanding our brokerage, understanding who's going to be successful here, and making sure they have the right tools. Is there like a poor man's version of Kelly? Is there like a do-it-yourself handbook that we can start the work?
Well, with? I mean, I'll say, to find a good producer, like I agree with what Matt said. Like they need to have sales skills. Like, a lot of times, you know, we're terrible at training in insurance. So mm-hmm. we want the unicorn. They sell, you know, $1 million a year and they know everything about insurance. They know our management system and they use all of our carriers. It's like, okay, well, great news. That's not going to happen. But you want to find someone that fits your culture, that's teachable, has a good attitude, and that has a sales acumen. So I really encourage people, if you're going out there looking for this person, personality test them. Doesn't mean that you make a decision to hire them or not, but you need to know how they're wired. Like, if they need to follow somebody, like Matt had brought this up, it's so much easier to put a new producer into a team of 8 producers, right? It's kind of like a little kid. They just kind of mirror what other people are doing. If they see everybody's doing an hour of cold calls, they're more likely to do the hour of cold calls. If you're sitting there by yourself in an office with, you know, 55-year-old account managers who are humming and hawing all day and the producer's out golfing and not selling, and you're like, what do I do? You're really going to struggle unless you're a very big driver, very independent, and have a huge network to start tapping into. But so you have to know the agency, but then when you're looking to hire, personality test.
Is there a particular one that, like, I love DISC, but it's not sales specific, and it's not a personality test, a behavioral test, but sure. Is there like the Caliper ones, or is there a particular one that you recommend for salespeople?
So Omnia, you can upload a producer job description and it will match them to those characteristics and give you interview questions, which is kind of nice. We also like Crystal Knows, which goes through DISC, Enneagram. There's like the Strengths Finder. It takes like 8 of them and combines them into one. So you got this really crazy mixture of things. But what I would say is, like, if you can find, I'm looking for the person that fits our agency culture. And I'm looking for the person that we can have those hard conversations. Like, what's your pipeline? Like, how can I help you? Let's coach you. And I want someone that wants to be coached, not somebody who's going to give me the block. Well, you know, it snowed today. Like, we live in a winter state. It's going to snow again, you know, like, so I'd be looking for that right person that's going to fit this role. Then it's fun to mentor someone and train them.
But if you have a Seinfeld character that wouldn't deliver the mail in the rain.
Newman, right? Wasn't it anyway, Newman?
Yeah.
Sorry, we're Newman. Forget that, but please continue.
You know, but so if you can find somebody, you can teach them insurance because they want to learn, they want this career. And I think that that's a great way to start. That is so much easier to do, by the way, in small towns. So you're, if you're in small town America, there's a couple good people that stick out. You know, they were the high school football player and their dad has a law firm and, you know, everybody knows each other in town. Now you can pick a good person up and stick them in. When you're in like downtown Houston, it's not the same, okay? Like, you really need to, one, pay somebody a lot more and really up your game. You're not working a community marketing effort or sales effort. You're working real ninja sales skills. So you're, I really believe your geography matters a ton too.
Yeah.
So you guys talked a little bit about cold calling. Mm-hmm. In my day job, there's significant amount of cold calling. I have a very large insurance network and there's still significant amount of cold calling. We call it prospecting. Not cold calling, there are some in the company that built their book of business. And for those who are new to the podcast, I don't sell insurance. I sell staffing services to insurance companies. So I'm calling on VPs, and there are some in the company that built their book of business 20 years ago, 15 years ago, by cold calling. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big believer that cold calling just doesn't work anymore, at least not in the market that I'm calling, which are VPs that have admins or that just don't answer the phone if they don't recognize your number. And recently I read this book specifically for staffing sales. And it talks about how cold calling back just 10 years ago, the average was like you would get a live person one in like 8 calls. And now it's one in 23 calls. And I find that my own experience is less than that. I get one live answer a week. I get so few live answers that I'm bad at them because I get zero practice. Oh. Do you guys, exactly. I'm like, oh, I wasn't expecting you to answer. I can tell you my voicemail.
I'm great at leaving voicemails though. I am awesome at it.
So when it comes to selling to regular businesses, not to insurance VPs, is cold calling still, does it still work? Is that still something that we should worry about teaching our producers?
I'm a big believer in having multiple pots that you develop leads from. So, and not being on any one, right? Now it's a balancing act, because if you try and have 10, you're never going to be able to allocate enough time to those 10 for any one of them to be really effective. But the key is you want, you know, probably 3 or 4 is the optimal kind of places that you can draw leads from and opportunities from. Cold calling can be one of them, okay? I think cold calling has changed a lot because of caller ID. It's changed a lot because of just behavioral aspects, right? So like open rates on text messages are through the roof, okay? Cold calling, voicemail, not so much. Like they can see the number, where you're calling from, you know, and so they can self-select to not pick up, right? Even so much as like some firms were built off of robocalls. And nowadays they actually have apps that, you know, are robocall blockers now and actually mess with your system. It's like, you know, this warfare that's going on. You should have multiple pots that you're pulling from, right? So like, I love social media from the standpoint of like one of the techniques I tell everyone to use is the 50 and 5 rule on LinkedIn. Put out 50 connection requests every single day on LinkedIn of your ideal contact, whether it's a prospect or someone who's an influencer. And then every single day, try and send at least 5 in-mails to people that, you know, accepted, and try and start a conversation, okay? Do not make the sales pitch on the first connection. The first connection is, hey, thank you very much for the connection. I'm looking forward to move forward, you know, looking for a way to kind of like build a professional relationship with you, and then ask how you can help, right? Like not sell them a product. Ask if there's someone that they want to be connected to, if there's, you know, something else within your network that you can help them with. You know, I'm a big believer in give before you get. So even if it's something that it's like, hey, this is a white paper that I worked up, I really don't care if you get back in contact with me, but I hope it's of value to you. You know, just give it 2 minutes to check it out, that kind of thing.
So you know? 50 and 5, I'm really, really interested in this. I hadn't heard this. By the way, is this a Matt Strzok idea, or is this a Gary V, or what is it called?
No. It wasn't Gary V. And in fact, this kind of bridges the last conversation that we're having about kind of like, you know, what's that next step once you kind of like identify someone that you want to determine whether or not they're going to be a good fit. I think it came from Noah Kagan. So Anyone who doesn't know Noah Kagan, he runs AppSumo. He's like a serial entrepreneur, mostly tech. He was like the number 11 at Facebook. They had creative differences, so they kicked him out, but he obviously got a nice stock plan to go out the door with. But so he's created a number of successful seven and eight digit, you know, revenue businesses. And so like on the producer side, like when he tries someone out, he's a big believer in like VAs and, you know, remote workers way before it was in vogue with COVID and everything like that. He actually sends them through a little bit of a gauntlet where they have to like fill out a form, then they have to do something. He gives them a critique, has them change it. Like producers aren't necessarily going to be like, you know, writing prose or anything, right? So it wouldn't exactly work that way, but you can create a little bit of a gauntlet for them to go through so that by the time they get to the end, you know, there's something there. But so the 50 and 5 technique is, I think, something that I got from him as well, where, you know, he just basically said, look, you have to be consistent about it, right? That's the other thing. Sales is about consistency. So it seems all like glorious and glamorous and everything like that, but really it's not. I mean, you see the touchdown, you don't see the thousands of hours of, you know, phone calls or emails or, you know, before the touchdown happens. So, but yeah, so I think that's from him, and he's got a couple of those other things that he does, but it's really got to be like consistent, right? Like, so, you know, 50 and five on LinkedIn, maybe a couple hundred phone calls. The other thing I'll say, and I know I'm kind of taking the air out of the conversation, but the other thing I'll say on cold calls is, cold calling, I think, needs to change from the standpoint of it has to adapt to that idea of bringing some value on the call and not just calling and saying like, hey, can I talk to you about your long distance carrier? Like immediately, you know, that's a sales pitch, right? Like it needs
to be car warranty. Really,
yes, exactly. Right.
Like, I've had some good luck with video emails
I have a great test case to tell you about that, but go ahead.
So you know, basically the email comes in and it says, hi, your name, mm-hmm. right? With my smiley face. And if you click on it, it's 30 seconds. And it's a lot more friendly. I've had good luck with that. But if we all did it, your inbox would end up stuffed with those and they would.
But that's the thing. Not everybody's going to do it because some people are just terrified of don't know what to do. I do think this, like, we get this question about marketing and insurance all the time, and insurance agents have to rethink this. It's like, well, what's the ROI of cold calls? What's the ROI of the newspaper ad? Like, it's 700 things all working together to get someone to notice you. It is not a one and done direct hit. And so mm-hmm. it's like, so for us, we do a ton of marketing. We do these 3-minute videos. We do all these things. So if I look and say, here's the 20 people who are mostly looking at my stuff and I call them, I'll get a return phone call back from 15 out of those 20. But I did the work, right? Like I think the word cold call probably needs to be changed to like a warmer call, but it's that give to get. If you give enough good information, people, Tony's like chewing his mouth right now.
Well, when you said you did the work, yes, you did the work. And the funny thing is the work you did was not sales work.
No.
That's marketing work. But those 3-minute videos and the ability to track who opens them, that is marketing work. That is not sales work, right? To be honest, I struggle with that in my day job. I love Jacobson, a fantastic company. We don't have those tools. We're a small company and we have a great marketing team. And I love our marketing people, thoroughly do. But one of my few complaints is that I don't have A/B testing. I don't have a way to know who's opening my emails. I would love to have that.
We get in this debate, you can see it on almost every insurance Facebook group out there, which is, how much are you paying for your marketing? It's like, I pay a ridiculous sum of money for HubSpot, like an insane amount of money for HubSpot. And I will continue to pay an insane amount of money because I see every penny come back to me and I have it all done and it's a machine at this point. And so, you know, this is where it goes back to, like, if you're a hunter, you could amplify the hunter by adding marketing in. It's like gasoline on a fire. And so you have to understand though, but again, this goes back to finding that right hunter. The right hunter in a situation like you, like you want those tools, but there's a ton of producers out there that don't want to be on video, don't want to go do these things. Like, I think you also have to be really honest of, you know, hey, you're an insurance team. And I never want to hear anybody on my team ever say, I don't want to. It's like, we're going to try it five times and then we're going to decide if we want to or not. But when you shut something down so upfront, it's hard.
I think the other thing here that's changing in it's been changing for a long time, and it really should have changed earlier. If you ask most clients who their broker is, they're going to say the person. Mm. They're not going to say the company. Okay. Or maybe they'll say the person and the company. But the one key element in there is it's the person. It's still the person, right? And so that basically means that each one of your producers, you have to build a brand for. The one misstep I've seen from a lot of companies that are out there, and this is going to be a little bit of a hot take, but you build your personal company brand up bigger than your producers' brands. And that's a mistake. That's a gigantic mistake, okay? Most companies, now with the exception of mega, right? Like when you're in the Fortune 1000, people beat their chest and like, oh, Aon's our broker, right? I get that, okay? It's like a prestige thing. Especially like in that upper middle market to middle market area, they care about the person. They don't care about the, you know, the logo that's on the jersey. They just don't. Like if that person-
don't care about the carrier either.
Yeah, like unless you just have a machine that's built so that you minimize that person as much as possible so that it's the machine that they're literally like connected with, okay? But more often than not, it's a personal thing. So I think a lot of agencies, what they also need to do is focus on getting those individuals to build brand. And it's not always video. It's not always a podcast. It's not always blogging, okay? It's whatever suits them and try and facilitate them building that brand. It also depends on the industry, right? Like we have so many agencies that look at a producer that writes construction and a producer that writes fiduciary liability for financial companies. And they think if I just regurgitate the same social media posts on both of their social media feeds, it's going to be just as productive. And it's not true because construction guys aren't like the boss is on LinkedIn. Okay. But the majority of the construction guys that are out there, they're on Facebook in some group that shows like OSHA fail videos. Okay. That's where they are. Right. The fiduciary guys are out there on LinkedIn, like with the three-piece suit and everything like that. And they'll read a blog. Construction guys don't read blogs, right? Like their phone is cracked. They can't read a blog on a cracked phone. Like that's what happens. Okay. So you have to remember that, like if they're building brands in two different verticals, that brand building is going to look very different. Some of the same tools might be used, but the brand building is going to be a little bit different.
So we look in the mirror and we make sure that our process is tight. Mm-hmm. And our process leads to success, even for B players. I love that idea of make sure you have a process that leads to success, even for B players who are not divas. Mm-hmm. And we personality test them. We make sure that they're a fit. And then when they start, do we hand them a copy of The Wedge? Do we hand them a copy of the textbook that I had on the podcast last time, which I would show, but it's actually holding the laptop up, so it's not looking up at me. Do we send them to the Hartford Producer class, the Hartford School of Insurance, or does it vary depending on what they're trying to sell and what type of agency and what type of person they are?
I can step in here. I think the first thing is you need to give them a 3-year plan with really clear expectations, not right. a 90 day, not a year. You need to be honest with yourself about expectations, and they need to see that this isn't going to be a, you know, 2 weeks and I'm making $1 million, right? And you need to have some honest conversations from an idea of who's going to mentor this person. So, and if it's not you, it needs to be someone else in a sales arena. It can't be like the office manager is going to mentor you. No. That's the recipe for a disaster. And then, you know, you really want to sit down. And if I was an agency owner with this, I would sit down and almost for like a 2-day retreat, 3-day retreat and say, let's build your business plan together. Let's get on the same page and really map it out and then decide, do we go to the Hartford School? Like there, you can over-educate a producer up front and fill their brain with so much conflicting information. I like to keep it simple. Like, and this is why, you know, when we were just joking about cold calling, training new producers for a couple of weeks, I would like them to cold call. Let them get used to leaving a good voicemail. Let them get used to this new language that they have to learn. Like, it's not going to hurt anything if we call, if we get one out of 23 people on the phone. But you know what? When you do get more people that know you, you're going to feel much more polished and comfortable. And so it's kind of like, let's set little mini milestones that aren't this big, produce $500,000 this year, but set X appointments. That's what we need to focus on right now. And then if you weed them in, you really kind of build a solid producer that when times are good, they have a plan. And when times are bad, like coronavirus, you can't go out and do anything. They also can fall back on skills that they had originally that got them there to say, maybe I do need to cold call right now in a different way. But maybe that cold calling is saying, I'm in insurance. This has been a really confusing time. Just want to check in as a community member to see if you have any questions.
Yeah.
The mentoring program is huge in my opinion. And when it comes to a mentoring program, I talk a lot about it and I've never actually seen one within a brokerage. So I feel like Mario Puzo writing The Godfather, that like, this is how it should work because right, the logic says it, right? So in my mind, the mentoring program, it should be a producer that's mentoring you. And you did mention that, so I got that one right. number two, in my mind, it has to be a producer that built their own book, not somebody who got it from dad and inherited it. Also, it has to be a producer that built his own book in the last 10, 15 years, not 40 years ago, because the world has changed a lot. How we sell has changed mm-hmm. a lot. And number four, and I'm big on this, there has to be skin in the game. Why would a successful producer give up some of his time to build your book if they're not getting paid for that, if they're not getting right? So am I wrong on those, or did I get those roughly?
I don't think
correct?
You're wrong, but yeah. I have a feeling the people calling you, Tony, don't have this fleet of producers that they can say, let's go assign a mentor to.
That
I feel like they're a producer, maybe their cousin's a producer, and they're looking for this young gun that lets them work less, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think in the absence of that, the owner still has to step in and do their part. This is an investment that the owner is making as well, and say, hey, and I'll add one thing. I don't think you went to four or five, if it's six, whatever it is, the mentoring has to be consistent. It can't be when you have time. Like, oh, I didn't have time this week. I didn't mentor the kid. So the kid sat there like staring at the wall, yeah. Reading an insurance book. Awesome. That's perfect. That's exactly what he wanted and what I wanted.
Matt, I think I interrupted you, but I have to get the mentoring thing out.
No, that's okay. I mean, you're here to provide structure, which is ironic because I don't know if you're always the one providing the structure.
The least structured person ever.
There's so much to unpack there. It's like, I mean, my first thought is going like rewinding to the idea of cold calling. The reason why it also has to be rethought is it's not just a call, right? It should be a call, then it should be an email. Mm-hmm. It should be a LinkedIn, you know, message request, something like that, right? Go multiple places because people look at stuff different ways, right? Like they go ahead, Kelly.
I was just going to say, like, it's also too, like, if you have been doing the other things, I look at cold calling like lottery tickets. Like, that's how I always was taught to do it. It's like, take an hour and scratch your lottery tickets. You don't know what you're going to find and you can't win if you don't play. And honestly, if you're in sales and you spend 1 hour a day on, you know, scratching lottery tickets, you still have a lot of time left in your day. So,
yep. Yeah. And to your point, it needs to be consistent. Right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was my first thought, was multiple touches on the mentorship piece. I couldn't agree more in terms of, you know, I wouldn't be where I am right now without having someone that I mentored under. And I wasn't hired as a producer. I was hired as a CSR that became an account executive. And what they found was I was like really good at rounding out accounts to the point where eventually they sent me on a couple solo where he couldn't go. And we ended up closing those accounts. And so that was also something that made me think, like, you know, you don't always have to have this traditional path to becoming a producer. If you're a really good CSR, you know, there's potential there to turn a really good CSR into a producer. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe they just end up being, what did you call Tony, a CSR that-
Cross-selling
CSR. Yes, yeah. You know, and that's possible, right? But you don't always have to have this traditional path to becoming a producer from, at least from within an agency. But yeah, that mentoring piece, it needs to be consistent. I agree. If you do have an ancient producer, okay, just make sure that you're also giving that producer an opportunity to mentor with someone else who's current, because what you'll also find out is that ancient producer is really good at building rapport face to face. Okay. That is their meat and potatoes, right? Then pair that with maybe a younger producer who's on the up and up, who's using, you know, new stuff like LinkedIn and things like that for pieces of contact.
So this is how you TikTok.
Yeah.
Well, so dancing videos.
What was funny is you also asked Tony about, like, you know, just handing them the wedge or something like that. There's actually something that NFL teams used to do with, I don't know if they do it anymore because the story has gotten out, but they used to give out the playbooks before they drafted players, and they would quiz them on the playbook when it came time to do the face-to-face interview. But what they would do is they would tape a $100 bill in somewhere in the playbook. Right. And so if they walked in and didn't say anything about the $100 bill, they knew that they didn't even go through the playbook. Right. you can do fun stuff like that with your potential producers as well, or even the producers that you're cultivating. You know, I think the other thing is that, and I would love to hear your opinion on this, Kelly. You shouldn't be in a rush to turn a producer into an all lines producer. Okay.
Right.
Let them have one or two really good niches, whatever it is, cyber, fiduciary liability, you know, work comp, whatever it is, whatever they seem to have a knack for, one or two, and that's their hook. That's how they're going to get into the accounts, right? Don't expect them to be an expert in every other line of coverage. That's why you have the agency principal. That's why you have other producers. That's why you have really good seasoned CSRs to help them with that stuff. But yeah, that's a really important piece. Like, don't think that they're going to become like the best producer in all lines, like within 6 months. It's not going to happen. Give them two things that are like home base that they can fall back on.
I think especially if they don't know anything about insurance, right? Like if we're finding new mm-hmm. people, I tease people. I mean, I'm sure Tony, you see this all the time, but like even an account manager, I counted one of the account managers I work with has 83 logins. They log into 83 different things, okay? So we're gonna teach them insurance, logging into 83 different pieces of software, okay? And it's like, I think people forget because we've been doing it for so long. They have to learn a new language. Like there's the biggest thing, and why I love what you said, Matt, with the two things is producers need to be confident. And if they can be confident, they can have a conversation. When a producer lacks confidence, even if it's small, like they fumble around and honestly, they don't want to get off the block because they feel like they're going to make a fool of themselves to their network. And so you got to have a couple of things that just make them feel confident.
Yeah. And here's the other thing. Here's also where agencies run awry. They try and write everything that moves.
Ugh.
Okay. Do not do that. Do not do that. All right. Sign up for Bold Penguin, put that stuff on the exchange that doesn't fit within your risk appetite or within your bailiwick, and let that stuff go. Okay. Make a little bit of money on the front end. Focus on what you do. Okay. I write public sector, mostly municipalities, and I write biotech. Those are my two things. Okay. If it's outside of that, if I have time, I'll chase it. But if I don't have time and I don't have, you know, five other things that are within my purview, I give it to someone else or coordinate with another brokerage that will share commission with you. Like, don't try and spread yourself too thin.
Hey, Amber, if you're listening, we would totally accept sponsorship from Bold Penguin. We would be happy to mention you. We'd find a way to mention you every episode.
Yes. We need a nickel. Give us a nickel.
That's one thing that I do tell producers all the time, or agents that call in all the time, is specialize. Right. All the research says that specialists do better long term. What I don't know is whether you can specialize at the very beginning, or if at the very beginning can you specialize and be successful, or like chances are you kind of have to be a generalist until you find the thing you really like and can really learn.
Well, if you think about what Matt said, he's finding somebody who's already in construction, knows they like construction, turning him into an insurance agent. You know, like I think it's way easier to become a specialist up front than a generalist. Because if you think about just all the different types of forms you have to learn to become a generalist. And I also think a lot of it in sales, if you really, truly want to be a great producer, A lot of it's going to be networking, and you can rely on your back end for the coverage and the documentation. You can go down that path and get better at it as you go. But I think it's way easier to walk into the Association of Contractors than it is to go with your briefcase and walk down Main Street and knock on doors and hope the florist wants to talk to you about their $500 bob. You know, you can do a lot more damage. And if you want to market like videos or blogs, you can build that brand name for yourself, because this is an industry where you're speaking to what they care about. You know, what does every Main Street business care about? Who knows today?
That is a perfect lead in too. You develop opportunities by developing tools that help the people that you're trying to write their business. And it's not salesy. You're coming in, you're saying, look, I do insurance, but I'm not here to sell you insurance. I want to find out what your top two or three headaches are, because I'm going to go back and research it and get some information together and put it out there for everyone who's like you. But you just started that conversation with that person. They're like, holy crap, they care about actually helping instead of making, you know, the sale. I would love to hear your opinion on this, Kelly. It doesn't affect smaller agencies as much, but medium and large size agencies a lot of time will have, like, you know, a rookie of the year producer prize or something like that. As fun as it is to have someone get up on stage and they wrote $500,000 in new business their first year, I always thought that that was like, it was actually a net negative, because now you're setting the table where all these rookies are like, I'm going to be rookie of the year. And then they write $10,000. The rookie of the year writes 500 and they're like, I might as well hang it up because I couldn't write 500 my first year. And you're like, no, I'll take 10 this year and then 20 next year and then 30 next year. Like, just improve every single year. I would love to hear your opinion on that.
So I like to think that, you know, I think it's always good to keep new producers competitive with each other. So I'd almost look at it like, hey, you did good this month. I think year is a long time, right? It's like, but you have some people that are going to be slower starts. You get some people that will catch on fire at different places. I kind of agree with you on that front. I don't know if it's the best thing in the world, but I do think it's great to celebrate when people hit milestones just in general, right? Like, hey, you hit your $50,000 mark. You hit your $100,000 mark. Let's all celebrate and cheer people on. Because I think that does motivate the people who are maybe a little lower, saying, let me put the extra work in, or, hey, what did you do? What worked for you? You know, and everyone's going to take their own path. And especially if they're in different niches, you know, some of them are easier, like municipalities, like your 1-1 and July 1 are awesome.
Yeah.
You know, in between, you know, you're not selling necessarily a ton.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful on some of that stuff.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Tony?
Well, I don't want to keep you guys pot, you know, make you late for your next appointment, but it has been absolutely wonderful. And I myself have learned a lot about how brokerages work, how agencies work. So thank you for that. And I think this will be really helpful. And I'll tag you both when I post it. I've got nothing to close with. I do think that it gives me hope for agencies out there, because I'm often a kind of a curmudgeon on that side. I'm always like a bull for the carrier side, and it's hard for me to believe in the agency side, except for the specific agents that have been very successful. Commercially, definitely, like brokers would always be necessary. Yeah. But I think you guys have done thank you so much, because I have learned a lot.
Well, thank you for having us. It's been really fun. And I think, you know, if you're ready to have a producer, just have a plan. That's all. But don't, my big takeaway, don't think a producer's the magic cure all, you know, it's not penicillin.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's actually a lot more work.
It is. And I would say if you don't go halfway, if you are at the point where you're hiring your first producer, or, you know, you've had a legacy agency where you haven't hired a new producer in a long period of time, okay, plan it out and actually think how you're going to find this person, how you're going to cultivate them. Don't just like, you know, oh, Jimmy's cousin is getting out of college, he needs a job, let's just bring him in. Like, no. That's the wrong, that's going to fail. It's going to fall flat on its face. And that's the other thing. You mentioned, Kelly, like 3-year commitment. It's a commitment to find a producer. Most producers that are successful, they're not successful the first 12 months. Okay. Right. it takes them 3, 4, 5, 6 years in order to be able to hone all those tools and kind of get the system down. So just remember.
I think that question is very, very important. Is the 3-year validation period still reasonable? I'm kind of a big believer that you need to push to like 5-year, but I don't know if I'm wrong in that.
We tell people target 3, but give credit for people who are on track, really trying, like putting the work in. Okay. So like you can give a bonus 4th year in your mind, prepare for 3 to 5, but really have an honest conversation with yourself at 3. Is this person truly working out and a good fit? Because by 3, you should clearly know. You'll know in year 1 if it's a total disaster. Okay. But sometimes you get a good person who's a slow start, who's a relationship builder. The relationship builders take more time to click through. But if they're setting those appointments, they're doing the activities, and maybe they're just struggling to close, I'll work with them to get up there and give them another year and work it out with them. But I think, you know, in your head as an owner, 3 to 5, but present 3 so that the heat is on to 5 years is a long time.
if they are trending in the right direction, do not be so hasty to cut them off, right? So like what Kelly was talking about, sometimes it's this slow burn and then all of a sudden it arcs at the end, okay? Just remember that. I've seen producers that would have gotten kicked at the end of that 3 years because they came up 10 or 20 grand short in what their you know, mark was supposed to be. And then like the year after, they ended up just blowing everything out of the water because 2 or 3 of those accounts that they were working on finally hit. So just remember that, like, it is not like a all or nothing kind of thing. And I get it. You want to light a fire under their rear end so that they're not like, you know, but that also being said, a lot of those people are going to have a fire under them regardless. Right. So, but it's really that key is just make sure that they're making constant, you know, I mean, if the first year they write $500 and then the next year they write $1,000, okay, mm-hmm. that's not trending upward. That's basically nothing, right? Like
they doubled their production.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. On a percentage basis, it's fantastic.
They get sophomore of the year for yeah. the highest percentage growth.
Most improved.
What Matt's saying is really important. You got this new producer. Don't just judge them on premium dollars. Okay. Mm. Don't just judge them on commissions. They need to be the activity is the important part. You know, if they're setting appointments, they're getting X dates, they're having the conversations, you know, activity leads to sales. If they're not doing the activity, that is your biggest problem.
Yep. Yeah. And you know what? Sometimes it's the agency that's holding the producer back because maybe you don't have the market that they need, or maybe you haven't built the carrier relationship yet. So you also have to remember that too. If they have like a low hit ratio or a low close ratio, that close ratio could be the agency, might not be the producer. So just remember that too.
Or I feel like we keep doing that. Or one more thing.
Yeah.
Or you know what? The owner's files are getting preferential treatment to the seasoned staff, and new guy's file is like, well, he filled out the Accord app wrong. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's his first one.
there was so I started my career in transportation, not in transportation insurance, as a dispatcher in transportation, dispatching truck drivers, and it was a very hard job, and there was a time where the VP of operations, basically my boss's boss, said, you know, you guys keep complaining that this is really hard, that you can never get the right loads. I'm gonna go back to my roots and dispatch a team for a week. But he announced which team he was going to handle for that week, right? So somebody goes on vacation and Travis, the VP, takes over that team, and he gets just every load he wants, right? Because the customer service people who are in charge of booking the loads know that he's managing the team this week, right? Mm-hmm. So at the end of the week, he's like, I don't know what you guys are complaining about. I got everything I needed.
And you gotta watch out for that, because that internal staff knows where their paycheck is getting paid for, and they look at your newbie file as a heaping pile of you know what. Because generally the first deal you bring is definitely going in the E&S market and it's hairy, and they're looking at it like, this is never going to close. They're not looking at it like a mentoring opportunity. So you just got to be careful too.
Yes.
That is a great warning. Thank you both for joining today. We are recording on December 17th. So Merry Christmas to you both. Happy holidays. Happy New Year.
Happy holidays.
It won't go live until probably first week of January because I already have a couple in line. And also, I don't want to dump this great episode on like the week between Christmas and Thanksgiving and New Year's where like everybody's on vacation. So I think it'll get the most listenership waiting for the 1st of January. So just so you know that it'll be a little late compared to normal. But thank you both for joining.
Thanks, guys.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tony.